Hello, everyone, and welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. I'm Paul Taylor, the president of Evolving Wisdom, one of the organizations producing this event. And tonight, we'll be continuing this deep exploration of the future of spiritual practice with Robert and Diane Masters. Terry Patton is the visionary behind this groundbreaking series and our host. Terry is a vital leading voice in the fields of integral evolutionary practice, leadership, and spirituality. He is the author with Ken Wilber of Integral Life Practice, and his personal website is integralspiritualpractice.com. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you, Paul, and hi, everybody. Well, we are really delving deeper and deeper into these questions about consciousness and culture. Beyond Awakening was conceived to be a way to deepen our public dialogue about how our spirituality can evolve to help us rise to the challenges of our time, which, you know, are sometimes very perplexing, even overwhelming. But we, I think each of us in different ways feels the call to be true and to be the force of a healthy human adaptive response to a time of dramatic evolutionary pressure and tension. So we've been exploring a whole series of probing and enlivening questions that have really catalyzed my growth, and I've been hearing that it's been a very powerful experience for many of you listening as well. So tonight I'm excited to go deeper into one of the juiciest topics within this field, which has to do with intimacy. Robert Augustus Masters and Diane Bardwell Masters will be joining me both as experts and really as human beings in a relationship. The dialogue is entitled Transformation Through Intimacy, Relationship as a Crucible and Sanctuary for Transforming Human Consciousness and Culture. Robert is the author of 11 books, including Transformation Through Intimacy and Spiritual Bypassing, his most recent, as well as a teacher of spiritual deepening and a psychotherapist with a doctorate in psychology. The unique integral intuitive work that has emerged from his 32 years of experience dynamically blends the psychological and physical with the spiritual, emphasizing embodiment and authenticity, emotional openness, emotional literacy, and deep shadow work, and the development of relational maturity. For more information, you can visit robertmasters.com, and for his online work, visit masterscenter.net. Diane Bardwell Masters is Robert's wife and beloved partner in all things, and she works side by side with him in their sessions, groups, and trainings, contributing deeply to that work, being a highly skilled psychotherapist in her own right. She's also an intuitive healer as well as a professional singer with a special talent for accessing and transmitting heartfelt spirituality through her original music and chants. Her most recent CD is Oh Breathe Us Deep, and a new CD is going to be coming out soon, which features just beautiful music that supports deep healing and awakening. And there's more information online at dianebardwell.net. So, Robert and Diane, welcome. I'm really delighted to have you with us today.
Hi, Terry. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes. Well, great. You know, I wanted to say that I created this series with a sense that we are in a catalytic moment in which our understanding and our practice of not just spirituality, but just our humanity, in a sense, our spirituality being an important dimension of our humanity, is under pressures to rapidly evolve, almost to mutate. And this expresses itself in lots of different ways. And one of them is the transformation of culture, which is the transformation of all kinds of human relationships. We've talked about new levels of sangha, about the collective field that is created when people are in relationship with one another. And I hope that we can explore the way that your work connects with all those themes. But I want to begin by giving you a chance to explain something about your work, this focus on transformation through intimacy, and how you you sense that relates to these larger cultural questions that we're raising in this series.
Well, in a way, the title says a lot, Transformation Through Intimacy. We work in great depth and detail with people around this topic, around their relationships, improving their relationships. And along the root of that, we also work to help each person become more intimate with all that they are. So intimacy is an incredibly powerful theme in our work, whether it's to do with the relationship, per se, with other people, organizations, or with qualities that constitute us. And we found that the more intimate one is with all of one's qualities, the more capable we are of being in deep relationship.
So, right, that makes sense to me. And yet, people have been in intimate relationships since they were people. And yet there are some things that are unique and new that are going on right now. And you're really trying to press the envelope, it seems, in terms of that.
Yes.
So what's happening now and what's alive? You know, help
mm-hmm.
clue us in to what you're up
to. Well, it's a real shift because intimacy between people, of course, in a certain sense, has gone on since there's been human beings. But that word has been used very loosely. I think there cannot be true intimacy between people unless there's a lot of things established, including equality between the genders. So we're in an era now where truly intimate relationship between peers is quite possible. And it wasn't available not so many decades ago in the form it is now. So people have a chance now to truly do deep work within relationship, not only psychologically, emotionally, physically, but also spiritually.
It can actually become more of the everyday ashram, because you have to, everything that you're bringing into the relationship is also brought into the spiritual path and how you are with each other consciously and how you are in the world. What you're going to go out and do is all affected by that intimacy that you have with your own self and in the relationship.
So you're speaking into a field that I know is very tender for many people, because most people I know report that their expectations of their relationships have really gone way beyond what they can actualize. That we now seem to want to fall in love, you know, deeply and swooningly like a troubadour, and we want to stay in love, and we want to transform, and we want our partners to transform. We want them, everybody, to transform at the same time in a way that's congruent, and fall in love again, and then transform again, and fall in love again. We want to go through all of life that way. And there's an awful lot of serial monogamy among postmodern people. There's an awful lot of endings of relationships, and there's also a lot of reckoning with limitation that is, you know, a theme that goes through the whole scene of our current, you know, at least in Western cultures, you know, the current dynamic. Often people are counseled to adjust downward their expectations of their partners, not to insist on all the depth and fireworks that they intuit are possible. And yet you guys seem to be a voice for really asking a lot of what intimacy can be and really going for it.
It's a very sobering journey, because in it you cannot afford to confuse fusion with intimacy. Many people who rush into deep connection with each other are not expanding their boundaries to include the other, but rather just collapsing them. And there's a real rush to that. It feels really good.
It's very seductive.
It's very seductive, but it's a romancing of relationship rather than the true entry into it. And the real journey is quite different than that. If it's truly working, everything that is neurotic about you will be brought to the surface quite quickly, which is the good news and the bad news in terms of intimate relationship. I mean, whatever needs to be worked on, if you're in close with a partner and you're being transparent, vulnerable, open, all of it's going to surface, and then you have an opportunity to work with it. Whereas if you're only confining yourself, for example, to spiritual practice, to do deep work in yourself, you'll miss a lot of what relationship could bring up in you.
And the thing is, if a person is choosing in the serial monogamy that you're referring to, which is very common, it's because their conditioning is doing the choosing. And until we get very intimate with what makes us up and what our charges are inside from our different wounds in the past, we're still going to keep trying to choose partners that fit that scenario for us instead of coming from a healthy adult place.
And then we won't be having a relationship with the other person. We'll be having a relationship with their potential.
Which is all too often. In fact, we refer to it as the P word because the potential is such a lure for most people. We've all done that.
So how is it that this profoundly delicate, intimate, emotional work that people can do in relationship will translate? Like some very credible voices who've appeared on this series are saying something along the lines of, part of your spiritual maturity is behaving according to what you know to be true and transcending your dissonant feelings and really acting in a mature way that goes beyond the you'll have hurt feelings. Yeah, you'll feel rejected. Yeah, you'll feel all kinds of things. But
yeah,
Acting in a way that isn't based on those feelings and that are essentially egoic is the core of a real spiritual maturity. That's what you need to be doing. And they're, in a sense, kind of suggesting that people love and get along, but not be focused in their relationships, as if their relationship might be a sandbox for a kind of narcissism and self-indulgence, a kind of expectation for deep, intense, good experiences and really being seen and so forth in a way that might be narcissistic. And how would you respond to that critique?
I would say that that's rife with spiritual bypassing tendencies. It's so easy when things are difficult for us, mostly challenging, dark, in different ways, to want to rise above it, to use different practices to get us away from the pain of that. But we found over and over and over again is by going into that pain consciously, carefully, skillfully, the healing is much deeper, much more quick, because instead of running away from what is difficult, you've gone into it, and you will emerge from it if you do that. It's so easy to in the name of spirituality, to devalue the personal and overvalue the transpersonal. And also, when we devalue the personal, we also devalue the interpersonal, the relational. And in our work, we're very passionate about equally honoring the personal, the interpersonal, and the transpersonal. I think it's so easy when relational challenges kick in to try and bypass them, spiritually, intellectually, whatever, to get away from that. And in that, that keeps our relationship shallow and makes us overly invested in maintaining a certain spiritual practice that keeps a certain distance. It's almost like there's that famous line in a James Joyce novel where he described one of his characters, Mr. Duffy, as living a short distance from his body. We find many people who are overly invested in spiritual practice will disembody somewhat. They'll avoid the messy stuff of life, and they'll forget while they're doing that so-called messy stuff, those difficult challenges, are precisely the place where the growth can be the deepest and the richest.
And in trying to avoid that by staying separate from it, then they're not fully available for a deep relationship. You can't be. It takes transparency and vulnerability and sharing those really, really scary feelings, going into the darker stuff. And it's too easy to not want to go there in the name of being spiritual. And when people say, well, it's just it's just a story. I mean, you know what? It is the person's story. It is their history. It is personal. It's something that's happened to them in their life that is affecting how they behave, how they live in their life, and how they relate to other people. And if these things aren't dealt with, how can you go out and serve in the world in a greater way?
You see, when transcendence of our personal history, when transcendence of our personal history takes precedence over intimacy with that very same personal history, we're in spiritual bypassing's arena. And what I mean by spiritual bypassing is the use of spiritual practices and beliefs to avoid dealing with emotional challenges, difficulties, developmental tasks. I think it's very, very important. We're emphasizing this strongly now, I know, to become as intimate as possible with our personal history, to know ourselves so well that none of it is left out. We don't have to leave any of it behind. In other words, we don't have to drop our ego any more than the sky needs to drop its dark clouds. It's just another arising that needs to be related to skillfully.
So this is, I thank you for laying it out so clearly and forcefully. So, of course, this, I think, makes me and probably everybody else on the line really curious. Okay, so what does it look like to go into that pain, to go into those dark places and be transformed in the process? And incidentally, Robert, I'm not sure you're aware, we only have one volume control for you and Diane. Diane's coming through loud and clear. You're a little softer. So if you could speak up a little, that would be terrific.
Okay.
So what does it look like? You know, what so let's I'm yours. I'm really responding to this.
Okay.
This is you've got me now. Okay, how do I do what you're recommending? What does it look like if somebody comes to you and really is courageously willing and going for it, and they have a relationship that's, you know, representative of the kind of folks who come to you? Probably a lot of love, but a lot of broken places too.
Well, first of all, we would create some connection with you. There'd be a sense of safety, sense of openness. And then whatever was troubling you, we would start to talk about it in more depth, taking great pains not to shame you for this dark state you're in. And slowly but surely, we would have you take your attention into that state without losing touch with yourself. So there'd be a certain mindfulness established, and at the very same time, you'd be feeling your way into it. The emotions would be surfacing more. And we would have already told you by this time there's no such thing as a negative emotion. What is negative is what's done with emotions sometimes. So there'd be the sense of okayness, that it's okay to be where you are. It doesn't mean that Terry is no longer a spiritual being because he's crying or he's scared or he's shaking, he's ashamed of something. And as we took you into that, this would involve emotional work, body work, psychotherapeutic tools, all working in kind of an integral conjunction, you would inevitably emerge from it fairly soon, feeling more whole, more open, more grounded, and less prone to pushing this away. You'd feel, it'd be as if you'd reclaimed a little piece of yourself. There'd be a little more Terry now. And in that, you would feel more expanded, probably a little more spiritual. Your perspective would be more grounded. And this sounds psychotherapeutic, and it is, but it's also more than psychotherapeutic. It is integral, is to do with embodying what we might call a radical wholeness. By going into those dark zones and realizing as we do so that if you really want the treasure, you got to face the dragon. You have to also realize the dragon is there as kind of a guardian to make sure you're capable of wisely using the treasure.
So, Terry, if you came, what we would start out with is finding out what's not working in your life. What are your particular challenges that where you feel that you're being held back, or you're having difficulty with your relationship with your wife, or in the world, in your place in the world? And we'd start exploring, but we do it fairly quickly, exploring the history of where those, some of those things began, and we start connecting the dots, and many times, say, let's just take a, for instance, we might find that a person had, or that you had a situation in your early, a dynamic in your childhood where your boundaries were really trashed by, say, an overbearing parent or an abusive parent, which happens. You know, we work with a lot of abuse. And people that have been in that situation don't have strong boundaries when they are older, and that affects everything in their life, including their spiritual path, including the inner critic that comes from that toxic voice that comes inside and is the one who's blaring when they're sitting to meditate. We start working with all of those things and tying them in together. It's hard to put it all in a nutshell, of course, in just one a moment.
So if I'm on this phone line and I'm listening to this, and I'm not going to come to one of your workshops, I can't afford it, I live on the other side of the world, but I'm really trying to take to heart what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
How can I do that? Is it really simply a matter of letting myself feel what I feel and
no,
allowing my experience?
Well, you will need some skilled help, of course, but people can do some of this process themselves, and that's why Robert wrote the book Meeting the Dragon, Ending Our Suffering by Entering Our Pain, where it explains step by step how to go little by little towards it. You don't want to just jump into the whole thing because that could be overwhelming. It has to be done very skillfully.
So it's a matter then of creating an inner circumstance of enough trust, perhaps with a skilled therapist or very mature and wise and deep friends, and certainly your partner, so that you can really surface what's going on in a way that's extraordinarily kind of real and
yes,
you know, which drops down into it in a way that's uncommon, and out of that there's a crossing of the boundaries of what's too painful to feel or the parts of ourselves that we reject or the territories that feel too scary or too dark to be in.
See, Terry, what we're doing in a sense is we're not excluding anything from our investigation. We're making room for all of it. And when we do that, it deepens our compassion for everyone else who has similar states, difficulties, challenges. So in a way, this sounds like initially like maybe a very self-centered undertaking, but when it's gone into wholeheartedly, fully, it ends up touching many people beyond the person who's doing the work.
Yes.
It spreads, and we've seen this happen again and again and again, to our intense focus on, say, one issue, one person, one relationship, inevitably translates to a widening of the circle of compassion. And it's not an intellectually spread compassion. It is visceral. It is felt. And I think that's the value of doing relationship really deeply, honoring it, and also becoming so intimate with our spiritual bypassing tendencies that we don't talk ourselves out of going deep. We don't make anger wrong. We don't poo-poo fear. We honor all emotions, all states, and so we can work with them skillfully. Because if we shame ourselves for having a certain state, it's very difficult to work with it.
So part of this is about denumbing. And when we denumb personally and we are actually turning towards our pain, it helps us, number one, have greater compassion for ourselves. But then we take that into our relationship and we have greater compassion towards our other partners, our partner's pain. But then other people's, and that's how, when it breaks your heart open, it breaks it open to a wider love and to a much larger compassion, you can serve more deeply that way. And it activates us to do more in the world.
And is this then, from your perspective, one of the most important ways that the whole process of personal growth and spiritual practice is now evolving, that our deeper and richer interiors and that more knowledge of how we become split and alienated from parts of ourselves has come to a point where we can actually become, in a sense, just bigger psychologically and spiritually, and that this willingness to go there is like an evolutionary emergent in terms of the interiors of human beings.
Yes.
The interiors and the exteriors, because when you do the work deeply, you'll find that your behaviors parallel your internal states more and more clearly. And you become a force for really life-giving purposes for many, many people. Without trying to be good, without trying to be helpful, your very presence becomes helpful because you have ceased turning away from what's difficult for you. So you model that for other people, that all of it is the divinity in drag. All of it is workable. And I think that's our next stage as humans in many ways, is to become intimate with all that we are, everything. Not to turn away from any of it, not to rise above and escape it, but simply to know it so well, not to get lost in it, but to relate to it with all our heart, all our being, tremendous mindfulness. Then we're not caught in anything, but we're in relationship to it. We're not dissociated from our bodies, our emotions, our difficult states. We're in relationship to them.
We're fully present.
So if I'm working with you, Terry, and say you have your inner critic is very strong, I'm not going to try and preach to you about how we can get rid of that, how we can transcend the inner critic. I'm going to teach you how to know it from the inside out more than you do, and how to relate to it really skillfully, so that when it does kick in at different times, because it does in all of us, you can relate to it so skillfully that it does not run the show. It gets to sit in the back seat and play. It can be in the back bleachers of your mind, making a fuss, but it's not in the foreground running things.
And from what you just said, I would infer that you had to do that, and that's why you can help somebody else do that. So there's
this
intimacy with oneself. I have found myself feeling that this agenda of social change, of being responsible for our world in a different way, for our spiritual practice to enable us to be planetary citizens in a fuller way, requires us to shift the intersubjective space. We have to be willing to show that most of us feel to some degree scared when we see some of the larger trends in our world, that we want to rise to that. Sometimes we feel confused, and that there's a tremendous amount of vulnerability involved in really being authentically related to those big issues. And generally in common society, people have this stiff upper lip, I'm cool kind of, there's a hardening of the aura almost in public
going to
spaces.
The big picture too. Yeah.
And the level of tenderness and connectedness that would be authentic expressions of us feelingly meeting these enormous challenges to our whole world and species. They're the ground for a different level of intimacy. Wow,
absolutely.
We're here. All this is going on. I want to help. I don't always know how to help. That's a profoundly tender and vulnerable place.
Well, it is, Terry. You know, and implicit in everything you're saying is vulnerability. If we're not vulnerable, if we're not transparently present with our feelings, we can have the greatest programs possible in mind, but we won't act them out skillfully. We'll be disconnected. We're too out of touch to do so. So part of the work here and everything we've been saying is to access a deeper vulnerability. Because real vulnerability is a source of strength, not weakness. And in that, we need to find out where we're numb, where we're personally numb, where we're collectively numb. There's so much collective numbness in the world now. And to start to work with that numbness skillfully and deeply. Because if you're numb, your actions will be less skillful. And we find most people have layers of numbness that have to be worked through. And to do so, you can't just say, you know, feel, stop being numb. There has to be work, and that work is psycho-spiritual. It involves deepening perspective. It involves a lot of courage as we enter those zones of ourselves that are numb, because they're numb for a reason. There's something underneath there that's been protected for a long time, perhaps going back to our early years, and it's not about to be dismantled just because someone says it's a good idea, but it can be done. And that's a lot of our work that Diane and I do, is helping people to de-numb, to thaw.
You know, if this feels aggressive in some way, you know, please let me know. I don't mean it in that respect. But implicit in everything you're saying, what comes up for me is, you know, I want to invite you to tell me where you've hurt and how you've been numb and how you've had a hard time crossing that boundary and what that opened up in your heart, and show me that in the that vulnerability. When you talk about what you would do for me, you're still in a position that isn't as vulnerable, inherently.
Yes.
So as I, in my curiosity and my desire for this dialogue to serve everyone who's participating, my curiosity takes me to ask you to do that kind of self-revelation. I guess what's coming out isn't so aggressive. I just wanted to make this an invitation.
I see it as curious, not aggressive.
I think that would really open this up for us all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I grew up with a very, very abusive father, and I was very hardened. And in my 20s, I found my way into some relationships that didn't go well and went badly, so much so that I ended up cracking. I had to go to therapy. I had to break down. I had to find my heart. And there was a lot of armoring to break down. At the same time, I discovered spiritual practice. I began to meditate seriously, and I was young and ambitious, so I really went for it spiritually. I had this notion that I could become enlightened. As in my 30s, I'd sit for long hours, do all these practices, and have all these extraordinary states occur. And after a while, it dawned on me. It took a while. I was kind of thick about it. It dawned on me that I was still the same neurotic in many ways, despite all these experiences, all these extraordinary states. And that's when I realized in my heart of hearts that I was not going to get rid of these things. But what I could do is change my relationship to them. So that deepened my therapeutic process, deepened everything about my life. Instead of trying to get rid of things, this is probably late 30s or so, early 40s, I began relating to them. So I became far more intimate with my anger, my fear, my shame, my joy, my history. And that furthered me far more than pursuing exalted states, rising above things, trying to stay in a non-dual state, all that stuff. I mean, I honor that for what it is at its best, but I saw myself, looking back, it's bypassing big time. So I was probably an ideal person to write a book like Spiritual Bypassing. And I've also pursued relationship my whole life, because even though a lot of it was blind when I was younger, I sensed there was something in relationship that I needed, not just at the neurotic level of being fulfilled in a codependent sense, but I needed it for my growth. It was too easy to sit on the cushion, be with different teachers. I mean, that had its own challenges, but it was not the same heat as being in a deep relationship where I had to show up. Or if I didn't, I had to see that too. So I'd say my deepest growth of my life has been in the last 5 to 6 years from being with Diane. I mean, we have a very lovely relationship, very harmonious, and yet it's brought up so much in me that needed to be dealt with and worked on. It's happened quite gracefully, continues to happen. Even though we have most of our time is spent in a lot of ease, we have given each other a tremendous amount of space to be all that we are, to bring up whatever needs to be dealt with. And that furthers our work with other people. You know, we train people to be therapists. So the circle of influence spreads.
And I would say, Terry, that for me, just the short version is that I had parents that got into meditation back in the mid-50s when I was a little girl, and I had a very different background, had a very, very loving background. But one of the things among many that I came away with was I don't know if I can describe it, but it's kind of a floating a bit above all the hard stuff in the world. Like I was very much in my heart and up, not so much in my legs. Didn't know how to confront or to really speak up for myself. Certainly anger was not modeled, because that was considered pretty negative. So my boundaries weren't so great, and I tended to be with people that would cross them. But I think the biggest thing is that I didn't even realize, and I see this happening with a lot of people, that there was a place that was numb, where I was actually holding a part of me separate from everyone. Even though I was friendly, even though I loved people, there was a place that I didn't know until later, till after I did the therapeutic work, till after I did turn towards the pain. I said, oh my God, I have been detached in a way that actually wasn't productive. It wasn't healthy. And now in my work, not just in my relationship with Robert and other people, but in the work, I feel it so deeply. I feel the compassion in a whole different way, and it enables me to work with people and hold a space for them that's entirely different than I could have done years ago.
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, this has been my experience, too, of course. This is not something that's entirely... I have continually found that I have had to soften my own resistances. I've found that one of the biggest issues in my own being are the parts of myself that I would tend to reject. My, things like the unspiritual parts of ourselves, self-hatred or shame or those aspects of the being that we think we should be transcending, and it might be really good to authentically transcend them, but the attitude that there's something about them that we want to get past often makes it impossible to have an authentic transcending and including experience. Instead, we just end up split. And so much of that maturation is about letting go of that refusal and just letting be what is.
And embracing all that you are.
And see, many teachers will make the error of shaming their students for having such qualities or perhaps not working with them in a better, more skillful way. Those qualities, when investigated, are just us in dark drag, asking to be met, loved, embraced, related to, and in a way reintegrated into our being. Not to run the show, but to simply be, here's another aspect of Terry, another aspect of Robert that's been pushed away, driven away by shame, guilt, self-loathing, and here it is. And when it's reclaimed, it assumes its rightful place in your being, its rightful position in your being. So you have a little more Terry, there's a little more Robert when that process is done properly.
Now, one of the contexts that we've brought in, the very first person I interviewed in this series was Ken Wilber. And Ken's model of growth and development makes room for these insights. It's by no means in conflict with what you're saying. But it would also assert the importance of these, the traditional spiritual realizations are very, very powerfully honored in those models. And certainly we've had other people on the series. Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev was with me just a week or so ago, and he is a beautiful being and doesn't feel very cut off from himself. But, he's teaching a more, I would say he has a very original voice. I don't mean to say it's just the same thing you've heard before, but it would line up more with the traditional wisdom traditions of India than what you're saying. Is there a place that these points you're making integrate with those other more obviously, put quotes around the word spiritual truths and teachings? How are these not in conflict?
Well, there's room for all of them in our being. I'll say something about Ken. Ken just interviewed me about spiritual bypassing, my book on spiritual bypassing, and we both strongly agreed about how important it is to include the psychological, the spiritual, the emotional, to bring it all together. It's part of being whole. It's like, of course we want to include the spiritual, but we don't want to over-include it to the point where we're pushing away the personal or saying to someone, that's just your story. To say that to someone who's been badly abused is coming to therapy would be a complete insult to them, to their whole being, that's just a story. It's not just a story. It's incredibly powerful history that's written into their bones. And it deserves a voice. It deserves to be heard. And it also deserves at the right time, to be given a fitting spiritual perspective. But many of us rush into the spiritual prematurely. We do it for less than spiritual reasons often. We do it so we'll look better, we'll function more skillfully in certain ways. We don't do it because we truly want to awaken. initially in many cases. We do it for other lesser reasons, which often are not acknowledged. And I think as one matures, that hunger to be awake becomes stronger. But it's not so much to be just be awake spiritually, it's to be awake to our whole being. So the little boy in me who is full of shame gets to stand in the light too, as well as a spiritually ambitious seeker. All of it. There's room for all of it. That's the thing. That's why we stress intimacy so much, because in the word intimacy, the concept of intimacy, there is the sense of being really close to another or to a quality, but not so close that we lose our capacity to focus. If we go too close, we fuse, and then we identify with that other, and like in typical romantic love, and then we simply don't have our ground, we don't have healthy boundaries. So intimacy is kind of a really beautiful blending of connection and a healthy separation.
Now, there are people who have not done psychological work or spiritual work who love each other and have marriages and families that in many ways have all kinds of aspects that are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the emphasis that the spiritual message to such a person would be, that's wonderful, and there's more. There's a transcendental dimension of being that if you included, there would be a level of inspiration, a level of deep seeing, a level of knowing of your being that would be way richer. You're kind of saying, yes, that's true, and there is a quantum shift in one's experience of aliveness and humanity in ordinary terms, which is equally important.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But if I am really comfortable, Terry, really comfortable in that situation, and you come and tell me about that there's more, I may hear you and be pleasant to you, but I'm not going to probably follow up on it because I'm so comfortable, I'm so cozy. You see, in that sense, that's where suffering can be grace. Like what got me off onto my path is incredible suffering in my 20s. I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but that suffering drove me into the work I needed to do. If I'd been far more comfortable, at ease, I probably wouldn't have done that. So it's an art. We often see people who are doing quite well, and we'll say this is not about looking for what's awful in your relationship. This is about taking your relationship from good to great.
To deeper.
And from great to what it really mm-hmm. could be. And that's often an attractive invitation to people who already have something quite decent going on.
Well, I think that even when you're on a spiritual path and you have a pretty decent relationship, there's something that happens. There is a transformation that happens when you go to those really scary places and you work with them and you come through to the other side. So what happens is you're more embodied spirit. You're more vital, the life that you have and the relationship that you can have with the divine and with your partner is just, it's bigger. It's more vibrant.
And the signs or the what are the beginnings of the evolutionary development that make one begin to be ready for the kind of thing you're recommending? What are the new capacities if this is a higher development, a new level of humanity and maturity that is part of how we are spontaneously at this edge of postmodern culture beginning to become healthier, more rounded, more integral human beings, there must be spontaneously appearing in some people the beginnings of some capacity for this kind of richer humanity. And is that right? And what are those signs, if so?
I think it's a hunger.
Mm-hmm.
A hunger that may seem very, very subtle at first, perhaps not even there.
A longing.
It starts to grow. It's a longing. You already have a partner, it's going well, but you sense there's more, and that longing, however muted it may be, is our guide. And if that person is around a friend, a therapist, spiritual teacher who picks up on that, they can help that one amplify his or her longing. And I think we all have that longing. I think when we're in an intimate relationship, I don't care how good the relationship is, we can sense where we're holding back, where we're stuck. The mirror is right there. We can sense it. And we can also sense that we can do something about that rather than just simply try to naively transcend it. We can actually become intimate with it, know it more and more fully. So that longing, I think, is a crucial thing to honor.
And that longing to go deeper becomes greater than the fear of what you might have to face.
Exactly. Your longing to be truly free has become stronger than your longing to distract yourself from your suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And does that require then that a person has met with some level of conventional success in their relationship? Or can somebody who's just never really been able to make their relationship work very fully, who's in a difficult relationship, is this kind of work only for people who've kind of established a basic health and success, or does it work?
How does
there must be some qualifications for the kind of thing you're describing if it is the next step in our evolution. Somewhat conscious, right?
Yeah. There has to be, but if someone comes who's not in a relationship or is in a really terrible one, the very suffering of that, when we work with that person, that cracks them open. There's an awakening, the psychological and spiritual. There's a bigger vision. When that bigger vision kicks in, it's awfully hard to turn that off. Once you've really seen the light, you can go back to sleep for decades, but the light, that experience is still in you and will call to you through your dreams, through your successes. And we see this in everyone we work with. I don't care how immature they may be, how damaged they may be. We all have the same longing. We all have that longing. And I think we also have the longing that you and I and Diane have, which is to serve in the highest good possible, especially as we age more. I know when I was 50, I felt it. I'm almost 63 now, and I feel it so strongly. You know, it's with me frequently, and I feel very at home with that. I don't feel like I'm being a good guy or I'm helpful in some special egocentric way. It's just I have to do it. Like that's how you had to set up the series. You're called to do it.
Yes.
And I love feeling called to do something. And most people we work with, they want to feel that call. They want to shift from having a job to a vocation where they're doing work they love, where they're in relationships where they're really making a difference. We all have that. And without that, I don't care how rich we are or sexy, we're not going to be fulfilled.
In fact, Terry, one little story that Robert and I discovered that when we were both single about 6 or 7 years ago, the prayer that I had turned out to be the same one he had about relationship, and that was, you know, I don't want someone to just come and fill the space. I don't want just to have a person here to be a partner. But if there is someone out there that with us being together, we can serve in a greater way than if we're separate, then send that person.
Exactly.
So this is interesting because there are some philosophies that have to do with transcending the personal that make the very same point. But you're saying that going through the personal, through all the ways in which I want you to fulfill my needs and you don't quite, and I have these feelings and that hurt my feelings and this was a frustration, and really letting myself feel all that and even communicating a lot of that back and forth with a mature other, the two of you together begin to transcend yourselves in service of the greater good.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And Terry, that's what we call a being-centered relationship.
Being.
And that includes earlier stages of relationship, me-centered and we-centered stages, but being-centered is what is inherently spiritual, but it's also very grounded, it's practical, intimate, it's highly functional, and the journey toward that being-centered quality of relationship matures us incredibly. So we hold that up as a vision for people we work with, who are especially in couples, to say you're not here yet, but you have tastes of it. You have a taste of what it's like to be being-centered in a relationship, but we have to get to know the you who still is hung up on being me-centered, in other words, narcissistic in relationship, what's in it for me, that type of thinking and modality, or we-centered, which sounds better, but we-centered can be codependent. It can be like the people form a cult of two.
And exclude the world.
I'd say a we-centered couple is more like two cults of one, having a relationship or an association, which is highly dysfunctional. We-centered, it's like a cult of two in its early stages, codependent. Then it matures into what we call co-independent, and where people become more autonomous, they're still connected. And, of course, the danger there is they become too autonomous, too caught up in doing their own thing separately. But in that stage of co-independent relationship, there's the seeds of being-centered relationship are more and more evident.
So we can really use the ground of working on being in a being-centered relationship, learning how to do that consistently. When we do that, we can go out and make a difference in the world in a whole different way.
Because then your relationship, you're modeling something without trying to model it. It's just there.
And does that make it possible for you to enter into co-creative partnerships and relationships with others besides your intimate partner at another level? And could it begin to be part of how a different quality of awakened or, you know, let's say higher octave of human culture might manifest?
Absolutely. Look at how many community projects fail because you don't have that level of maturity in the people that are trying to do this wonderful goal of the community. But how can they do that when they haven't gotten to that place within themselves?
See, Terry, I think what we're approaching here, I find very exciting, which is to take the being-centered relationship between peers and extend that without losing any of its quality, without diluting it one bit, to extend that into kind of a really healthy sangha, a group of peers, true peers, who are transparent, vulnerable, mature, they know themselves really well. A bit along the lines of when Thich Nhat Hanh was asked decades ago about the next Buddha, he said the next Buddha to him would not be a person but a community. And I've always resonated with that.
Yeah, we've talked about that quite a bit in this series. It's actually a really big, big theme. In fact, I've put forward an idea that there needs to be a new level of relationship between communities of practice, which I've called a metta-sangha, that if there can be some essential, really important agreements that unite people who don't necessarily all together agree about everything, people on different paths with different teachers or different traditions, but who understand some essential things in a fundamentally common way, could we then be coherent and therefore be a cultural force in a different way than we've manifested so far? And that I do feel like the beginnings of that are appearing here and there, and certainly that's somewhere we're headed a little bit in certain parts of the integral community. This is a discussion we had a number of the guests. And what you're talking about, because it's so intimate and so tender, I feel that it might be that some of the specifics of the work you've done, you know, might it transfer relatively quickly with people who've done healthy practice for some years? I mean, there are people who are very willing, you know, very, very free and able to meet their own feelings, and it, you know, people who have grown both psychologically and spiritually. There are more and more such people. And would it be possible for those people to just engage their own paths with a an increasing level of courage and depth and mutual trust, such that a collective field that is profoundly tender and profoundly intimate, but also perhaps strong in a different way, and influential and magnetic and inspiring, and you know, because we clearly have to be global citizens at a new octave. That isn't optional, I don't think. At least this is my conviction. I shouldn't lay this on you, but I would state that as if it's an observable fact. It's clear to me that life is asking something new of us.
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're being asked to generate a we space in which individual differences aren't homogenized, in which the personal, relational, and spiritual work in harmony. I think we're being pulled to that. We're being called to that. And I think the ideal training ground for that, for the seeds of that, is in what Diane and I are teaching and practicing as just intimate relationship with one other person. If we can manage that, and that's a great thing, once that is underway, and of course it's an ongoing process, one I think is much more capable of doing what you're talking about. If one has not done that, there may be a premature leap into that, an assumption that one can do that because one is a spiritual teacher or whatever, when in fact there may be some shadow work that needs to be done, some psychological issues have to be worked on. There has to be that transparency in all dimensions. Otherwise, I don't think what you're talking about would truly work. It would stay in the shallows too much. And we need more than the shallows. We need to jump into the deep end of the pool together.
And for most people, maybe not absolutely everyone, their intimate relationship or perhaps a new intimate relationship can be the bridge, the crucible, the sanctuary, the place where it can happen. That this is, for most of us, the most natural and immediate place to incarnate this risk-taking, this vulnerability, this courage, and this connectedness.
Yes, especially if you have the attitude that that's what you're going to do together, and that when something arises, it's not a problem that's inherently a problem with the relationship. It's something that's the next opportunity to work on. Sometimes it's not so much fun. Sometimes it's very painful. But if you don't have an exit plan and you have made this the container where you are going to really, really work with this and go for it, and that's part of your path, then it's a different way of approaching it.
Yeah.
And so
there's a spiritual commitment at the core of such relationships. You can't do all of this with a partner who conceives of the relationship only being about personal fulfillment. There has to be some feeling connection to a larger purpose or a larger service.
It's essential.
And there cannot be a
self-transcending
plan B.
Orientation. Yeah.
Yeah, there can't really be a plan B. If I had a plan B, I would be less vulnerable with Diane, less transparent. So we felt when we met each other and we got close very quickly, very deeply, that this was it for us. This is the last relationship this lifetime. I mean, it wasn't dramatic. It was very matter of fact. And there was no desire on my part or her part to have any sort of plan B, any exit. And not having that increased my vulnerability incredibly, made me more raw, and also grounded me more. Because there was just a sense of deep stability. And I think with that under our belts, so to speak, we can move forward into what you're talking about. Without that under our belts, it's much more of a slippery slope.
Yeah.
But what a lovely vision to hold. I mean, I honor you for having that, and I share that with you. I think it's a wonderful thing to hold and to find ways to ground so it can really grow.
Yes.
It's not just a beautiful idea. It's a living reality that's just begging for some manifestation.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
It's funny. We've kind of come to this point right at the time when I'm supposed to begin to open up the questions. So maybe I should let that be a sign and a synchronicity.
Yeah.
This is great. I want to just keep going, and I think we will be able to with the questions that will come in. So
yeah.
I know a lot of you have already typed out questions in the Instant Teleseminar window, and I'd like to invite others of you who have questions to go ahead and do that. But before we answer those questions, I do have a few announcements. Beyond Awakening is free of charge because of the generosity of our wonderful sponsors, including Next Step Integral. Over the last 4 years, I've had the great pleasure of presenting at Integral Education Seminars hosted by Next Step Integral. And these events have been among the most heartwarming and transformative ones offered in the Integral community these last several years. As an international nonprofit, Next Step Integral is involved in five fields of inquiry: education, parenting, ecology, the next generation, they call it Gen Next, and community. Specifically looking at how the Integral visions and perspectives can be put into action. And they really do an excellent job of walking the talk. In the coming year, Next Step Integral will be sponsoring a number of groundbreaking events, including the first ever seminar on Integral Community, as well as being involved in a mother-daughter retreat titled Raising Empowered Radiant Daughters that will be July 24th through 30th of 2011 in Costa Rica, where Miriam Mason Martineau will be co-facilitating with Catherine Woodward Thomas and Jessica Romisher. You can email journeys at journeysofthespirit.com for more information on this retreat, and you can learn more about Next Step Integral and sign up for updates at nextstepintegral.org. That's nextstepintegral.org. And the Institute of Noetic Sciences, or IONS. IONS invites you to join free so you can explore the science of inner knowing. When you become a member of this conscious community, you connect with like-spirited individuals exploring three program areas that offer enormous potential for positive change: consciousness and healing, worldview transformation, and extended human capacities. IONS hosts a global community where people connect, learn, and transform through live and online programs. Membership is free, so sign up today at noetic.org. That's N-O-E-T-I-C, noetic.org. And we also want to make sure that you're aware that this Sunday I'll be speaking with Dan Millman at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And next Thursday, a week from today, I'll be talking with Samuel and Linda Bonder, the founders of the Waking Down in Mutuality work, which has a lot of sensibilities that are quite resonant with what Robert and Diane have been offering. It's a psycho-spiritual integration process, too. So, great. Now let's get into the question and answer section of tonight's dialogue. There's a wonderful question here, very concise and very focused, from another woman with your first name, Diane. Uh-huh. Diane from Dusseldorf, Germany. She asks, isn't the intimate relationship with oneself the only one we really need to focus on?
I would say if you really want an intimate relationship with yourself, I can't think of a better place to learn about that and practice that and evolve into that than through an intimate relationship with another person. Because if we're only doing it with ourselves, we don't have the benefits of the profound mirror that a true partner can provide for us.
But not everybody wants to have an intimate relationship. This is not everyone's life path. In fact, my last dialogue was with just a stupendously beautiful soul, Brother David Steindl-Rast, who's, I think, 84 years old, and he's been a monk. And he's certainly, you know, a wonderful model for a beautiful human being. So we don't want to have a rigid requirement that everybody do it in an intimate relationship.
No, not at all. No.
So there is something of some aspects of the kind of courage and tenderness you're describing as the transformative process that goes on in an intimate relationship. For a profound individual, maybe the extraordinary individual, it is possible to encounter some of that in one's relationship with oneself and one's relationship to God and maybe one's relationship to one's friends and fellow practitioners, isn't it?
I agree.
Yes, I agree too. And I know that there, you know, when we do work with people that maybe are not in relationship and that would like to be in relationship, of course, there's never a guarantee that they will have one. But we always say that the work that they're doing, the healing work that they're doing on themselves, that would enable them to have a deeper relationship, also enables them to have a much fuller whole life. And so it's totally worth it to do that with them, for themselves.
Right. Now, there's a lovely question from Mary in Burlingame, California. How would you guide us to begin a sacred relationship? Are there questions to ask? Are there criteria to look for? Commitments to a particular way of being that should be made?
I think it's important to have a very, very honest look at oneself. At one, what one really wants as opposed to what one dreams of having, noticing what one is capable of. And we often have people make a list of qualities they want in a partner as part of the whole process of attracting their beloved. And along with that, the knowingness that they cannot simply just wish for that, work is required. If there's areas in their lives where they're, say, for example, completely out of touch with their anger, inability to form healthy boundaries, they cannot have a truly great relationship without that. So there's things are identified that have to be worked on. But once that process starts, that person is preparing themselves for a healthy relationship because they're deepening their work on themselves.
And we always recommend that when you're choosing a partner, that you look for someone who has already begun that process for themselves, where they're already doing their own healing work, their own self-inquiry. Otherwise, you end up, it's not a peer relationship. You end up having a parent-child relationship if you're trying to lead the way.
And again, to contact that hunger to be truly met, not from a immature place, but from a very deep place in oneself of being met. And as was alluded to in the previous question, it doesn't always have to be through another relationship, but that longing is still there. So if I'm a monastic and I'm not going to have an intimate relationship, in a way, my intimate relationship is with the divine. It's a truly deep second-person relationship with God. That can do the trick for me.
And also, one other thing is when you are choosing a partner, you want to have the longing be there to pull that person to you, but you don't want to choose out of desperation because you never pick well then.
You know, a number of the folks who've written in, Megan from Great Barrington, I think that's Vermont, Megan asks, do both partners need to be conscious of the work in order for the relationship to go to a deeper level? What if only one partner is interested in the path? And there was another question that more or less asked this same question. I'm having a hard time incorporating my partner into my life dreams. Feels as if I'm awake and he's not. It's maybe an egoic comment, but you know, perhaps he's not as interested in awakening. So instead of soaring together, sometimes he feels like an anchor to me. But I suspect that's, you know, implicit in what she's saying, I'm adding this, but you know, I suspect that maybe my attitude is preventing something that is possible. So how can I overcome this mentality? This is from Erica.
Well, first of all, many of us don't pick our partners. Our conditioning picks our partners. Then when we wake up some, we find ourselves in a relationship where our neuroses fit together well, but we don't fit. And at that point, if one person adamantly refuses to work on the relationship at all, probably looking at separation, but quite often when that point is reached, both people will go in for some high-quality therapy and look at the relationship really deeply and risk more in skillful ways, and they'll find out probably in a short time, is this worth pursuing or not? I mean, it's an error to leave too soon. It's also an error to stay too long. And to know the difference, one has to drop into deeply intuitive place with one's partner. And we've had many couples do this where they reach that state of deep, open, transparent intuitiveness out of which they can see what the next step is. It's not us saying to them you should separate or stay. They know, is this workable? And if it's not workable, one of us is going to be torturing the other one, trying to get them to come along, do more therapy, go to the spiritual teacher, and that one's going to, of course, resist. And what you want is a relationship where both people are in it together. So if you're in a relationship that's where the other person is really not wanting to do the necessary work, I would suggest upping the ante, be very clear about what you want, and have maybe a highly skilled professional take a good look at the relationship.
You know, that might be very good advice for the people who've asked these questions. I'm not actually reacting to that, but when I try to extrapolate this advice, and, you know, we've got this amazing planet with 6.8 billion people on it. There's so many people in relationships that are not this level of intimate spiritual partnership, and yet many people who have a lot of emotional, you might say, patterns and routines that are not so terribly conscious with their partners begin to wake up and find it possible to have profound spiritual experiences and perspectives where they care about the whole and where they serve and where they become dynamic. And if every person who began to wake up began to leave their partners and demand this higher level of fulfillment, wouldn't it be a really chaos-producing influence on the world as a whole?
Yeah,
can't really prescribe this as a general thing to everyone.
No, I wasn't prescribing that. The thing is, it's not about leaving. It's about bringing everything into a clear space so you can see what's there. And if the other person who's quote-unquote lagging behind decides to work on himself or herself, it can make a huge difference. But if the other person refuses, or worse, say, is abusive, then to insist that that person stay in relationship, the one that's had an awakening, to me, it doesn't serve either partner.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it has to be done on an individual basis, but it's very important to open up the dialogue, the interaction, so that the possibility of leaving can be put on the table at a certain point.
Not to suggest that they're going to, but to just be able to look at it very objectively.
You know, Catherine Woodward Thomas made the point that we may be coming to a place in our culture where we need to be able to have sacred ceremony around our endings as well as our beginnings. And we might need to be able to celebrate all our transitions and not only look at every relationship ending as a failure that maybe
No, we do that. We call that like a conscious divorce, conscious separation. We'll have people that have decided that face each other and really get to the heart of it, where there's, you know, there's a lot of tears, there's a lot of openness.
And appreciation.
There's a sobering quality. In a sense, here's what we did together, for better or for worse, and our paths have diverged so much that our being together does not serve us anymore. It did for a while. The difficulties served us. The pressure, the fighting served us. Now it's just eroding us, and we're both losing stuff. Our kids are doing badly because of it. Let's separate now before it gets really ugly. And then we often facilitate that type of separation, and it's lovely to see two people part in deep love, and we've seen it, and it's very touching. It's not as glamorous as the coming together, but boy, it can be very, very loving.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Very loving.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to open up the phone lines. If you have a question, please raise your hand by pressing *2 on your telephone. And we'll know that you're interested to ask a question live. And in the meantime, I'll take another question from the Instant Teleseminar window. There are quite a few really interesting questions here. James from Hubbard Lake, Michigan asks, can you say more about the pitfalls of relating to partners and relationships from the stance of potential?
First of all, if you are having a relationship with your partner's potential, you will unwittingly probably shame them for not measuring up, then they will feel like they've fallen short. They will scramble to get back in your good books, or else they'll resist you. But in either case, they're not in relationship with you as a peer. You've become the teacher or parent, and they're trying to measure up. And we've seen this not work big time over and over and over again. And that's why it's so important, if possible, if you're starting out, to be with a partner, not because of their potential, but because of what they already are. And of course, everyone has potential, but if you marry the potential, you're overlooking what is actually there.
Another angle from about this, too, is that many times people will be in a relationship that's abusive, and they see the potential of that abusive person. They see how, when they have their moments, how good it is, and what they really feel that they could become if they just hang in there and they adapt and they accommodate and they stay way, way too long. The children suffer, they suffer, and it's never, ever going to change. And they have to get a reality check about that.
They get a few crumbs of affection, and if they're starved enough, they'll make a feast out of it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
We have a call from Mark Nelson in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Dr. Mark Nelson from Milwaukee. I'm a transpersonal psychologist. I'm working on a great book about Friedrich Nietzsche. And he had a really interesting spiritual upbringing. At 8 years old, a hermit scholar taught him, he expressed it as gymnastic poses and breathing exercises to help his mind develop. Later in life, he had a brief affair with Cosimo Wagner, who was Richard Wagner's wife, that was an expert. Her mother had an affair with Franz Liszt, and she supposedly taught Franz Liszt and her daughter some sexual exercises to help creativity, and she was talked about the feminine, or a woman, again, it has the power to expand connection and imagination within a man and expand those to higher levels. And Cosima kind of felt her goal in life was
to find... I'm sorry, this is a bit long.
Did you
have a question?
It was some of those kind of exercises, some of those things of having the breathing exercises, many what we call tantric exercises today, on taking bliss to a higher level to spur creativity and connection with the world around and those mm-hmm. areas. And how are you two guys in part of working with people in that area?
Okay, so you're asking, in effect, then, isn't this fascinating that this was going on with these amazing thought leaders and artists and philosophers? And maybe this is part of what unleashed some of that creativity. And does this have parallels to your work, and how would you comment on it? That's right. Okay, thanks.
Well, the parallels might be in the sense that in a really healthy relationship, the sexuality flows very easily. It doesn't require fantasy, doesn't require the tricks to get it going, because the whole relationship is foreplay in a sense. I don't just mean sexually. The whole relationship is kind of a turn-on for being, for going deeper. And along those lines, we often teach people to release sex from the obligation to make us feel better, to stop expecting sex to do that job, and instead are taught to come to sex already happy, already loose, already unstressed, so the sex becomes a celebration of an already present connection and happiness.
So we don't teach that different techniques or using things like that to create connection. We emphasize the connection, the deep emotional connection between people, the spiritual connection, and that the sex is expressing that.
Expressing that connection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you, therefore, I mean, that's what you teach, but there are incredibly powerful energies and kind of psychophysical alchemies of human beings combining themselves in powerful sexual dynamics, and this is an important part of many people's experience. It isn't necessarily something everybody has to do, but it certainly has been an important part. There have been tantric gateways in the lives of many many people I know, many spiritual aspirants. You know,
but it's also
say
very
this
important.
Is very important.
Yeah. It's very important not to exclude our sexuality from the investigation. In other words, many people are busy meeting non-sexual needs through their sexuality as if all that's going on is sex. So when we're working with a couple or working with people, their sexuality is a key topic, their history with it, how they relate to it, because it's part of the whole process. And I think as one matures, there's a deeper, healthier, more ecstatic sexuality that co-arises with that. It doesn't require tantric rituals or any gimmickry of any sort. It simply arises because the connection is so deep it calls it forth.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any comments specifically about Nietzsche and Liszt and Wagner? Wagner's wife and daughter.
Well, he I think he died of syphilis, I believe, Nietzsche, so I mean he paid a hell of a price.
Okay. Well, thank you for your question, Mark. That was really interesting, and I hope you don't feel cut off. I just have that job.
Yeah.
We have a question here in the Instant Teleseminar window from Sheila in Maple City. It's a really beautiful question. What does it look like to support your intimate partner as he or she uncovers and explores these dark areas of their being? What does that look like?
It looks like this. You're holding a very loving space for that person. Instead of trying to fix them or rush them through the process, you are simply present with them. In the same way a really good therapist would be, but you're closer, you're much closer, you're involved, but you're not so involved that you're lost in their pain. You can hold them just enough distance from it so you can stay present. If they needed first aid, for example, you could do it in a split second, but you're right there. You're holding them in a beautiful, deep, grounded we space. And in that space, they get to rant, they cry, they rage. They unfold, and there's no shaming of them for being in this seemingly unspiritual state. Instead, there's love, and it's a very grounded love.
And there are other ways, too, that it might come up that you might notice that your partner is becoming very silent and rather distant, and you can gently ask them how they're feeling, what's going on, and invite them to be able to talk about their feelings instead of them going into some kind of dissociation or numbness, or at least to be able to tell you that that's what's happening. Another thing that can happen is, say, a person is working on their sexual abuse, particularly, you know, if something that came from a childhood. When a couple has, say, the man is working on that, then when they're making love, there are going to be times where it's just triggered, where the pain of that or some of that, the memories will come up and will say the way to be present for your partner in that situation is to be very aware of when the person is not there suddenly or freezing, and or to be able to tell your partner, I'm having this memory coming up, and you stop. You stop having sex, then you just hold each other, and you let that person cry if they need to. And then the connection is the most important thing.
And that's where the relationship is truly a sanctuary.
Yeah, beautiful. I know that that kind of deep emotional vulnerability that moves, where the sex is like a particularly intense expression of an incredible field of intimacy is
mm-hmm.
certainly the... Then the sex isn't burdened with a kind of fetishistic focus. It's able
yes.
to kind of arise in something even more profound that
yes.
is a very
right.
profound expression and exercise of. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, you don't do that to
yeah.
create a false sense of intimacy.
Yeah.
Security.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Annie in Rosamond asks a really beautiful and tender question. Would you please explain how it is exactly that vulnerability is strength? I would like a better picture of that. I know that it's true, but I want a clearer vision. It's important to me.
Well, the vulnerability that is a source of strength, I didn't say enough about this earlier, is a grounded vulnerability. If one is ungrounded in it, one could be deeply vulnerable, weeping deeply, crying, but be disconnected and in some ways very dysfunctional. The vulnerability I'm speaking of is the heart is wide open, the emotions are flowing, one is transparent, there's a groundedness. It's like you're standing, not like a piece of rigid cement, but more like a tree that's well-rooted, and the winds are strong, branches are moving, you're swaying. So you're not going to be uprooted, but you are so vulnerable. If someone looked in your eyes, they would see your heart instantly if they were open.
And it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable. If you're having pain about some of the things in your life coming up and you're vulnerable with your partner and you let them know what's really going on, and sometimes you're afraid, well, what if they reject me? What if they turn away or leave me because these things are coming up? It takes courage to be able to speak that out and to be that vulnerable and to show them.
I think we need to be warriors of vulnerability.
Heart warriors, kind of.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the song that we were talking about earlier. If everyone in it has that vulnerability and that capacity, magic can happen.
Yeah, it's very courageous work, though.
It is.
And you have to have safety. You have to have safety with your partner to do that.
Yeah.
And you have to have safety with yourself. Well, here's something that... I'm sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
Here's something that might be really an expression of some of that. It's really a very vulnerable question. Bridie from Cairns, Australia asks, I know I'm lagging behind my partner in some important ways, and I want to transform, but I don't know how. We've spent so much time talking about this, but it doesn't seem to help me. I've never spent time alone during my life. Do I need time in isolation? I think she means breaking up in order to do this.
I would say right off the bat, transfer from talking about it, because you probably talked an enormous amount around this with your partner. Take some action. Do some couples therapy. Do something that takes it into the experiential realm more. And also, if you need some space, and it's not just because you're in a bad mood that day, but it's a consistent sense of needing space, take it for a little while. See what happens. Because every good relationship, the partners are not fused. They both have a need for alone time, space. That's very, very important. Otherwise, you're a bit like being in a forest where the trees are growing too close together. Everything gets stunted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, if we had more details, we could go into a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
I understand. You don't have those, though. Miriam asks, I've lived in many of the ways you speak about, and I have a daily psycho-spiritual practice that allows me to investigate these things, but some years ago, I experienced being blown away into these very vulnerable states. The world out there just wasn't safe. Can you speak about the necessary protection in the outer world that we need to create as we open so deeply to our sensitive selves?
Yes. Yes, implicit in what you're saying is the need for boundaries. And when we get blown open like that, often one of the first things that goes is our boundaries. And it's so important to have healthy boundaries. And if we don't, to develop them. Otherwise, the ground we're on is too unstable. We cannot say a healthy enough no in relationship. We're buffeted by the wind too much, so to speak.
And
I think I'll say one more thing, Terry.
Yeah. How does somebody then know how to create the appropriate boundaries? Because
well,
there is a different level of being raw, being a raw wound out there, and sometimes.
Well, that can entail doing work on when they lost their boundaries to begin with, of what happened in their life where those were dissolved.
And to beware of spiritual teachings that can be very seductive in their kind of promoting, if let's go beyond boundaries, let's be limitless. And many people will get caught up in that, and they have not yet formed the boundaries that can be transcended. It's very important to have them. Now, I work with people who are referred to me by the Spiritual Emergency Network who've had psychotic breakdowns that have spiritual features. And the first thing I do with them is help them get grounded, really grounded, and a sense of safety before we work on the more exotic elements of what's happened to them. Grounded, eating healthy food, doing some basic psychotherapy, learning some mindfulness practices. We have to sometimes just stop, put the brakes on when we're blowing that open. and to honor ourselves for needing to do that.
Right.
Sometimes we just have to say, no, I cannot do this. I need a break. I need to just cry, or I need to hold up for a while, or I need. And to not shame oneself for having that need, because there's times any one of us can be blown apart if the event is big enough.
Yeah.
And we need that sense of safety and groundedness to heal, to move through that, to let the shock leave our system.
So do you think that, I mean, one of the common stereotypes is that as people become sensitive and they do therapy and they become more spiritual, they become less robust, less, more vulnerable, more subject to needing to withdraw from things because they feel so intensely, and that therefore this kind of growth makes you weaker or less, weather resistant.
It can. It can, Terry, because I've done a lot of men's groups, and often what happens, the guys are, they're lovely, they're very sensitive, they're tender-hearted, but they lack balls. They lack spine. So a lot of the work I do with them in these groups is to help them recontact their raw power without in any way closing down their heart. Because without that power, the therapy, you know, we can get very weakened. And people get codependent with their therapists, too. Like, we only work maybe with a person a few times because we travel so much. But we've seen people have been with a therapist for years and years every week. And you can just smell the codependency.
Well, our job is to help people get that inner strength, to get in touch with that core, regain that power, regain their voice, and to not need us anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
We have that. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There's one last question I'd like to take. We are actually at the end of our time, but I hope you can stay just a couple minutes late. Decky in Houston has asked a really great question. She asks, what about the relational maturity involved in engaging beyond feeling despair about the suffering around me? I experience a deeper vulnerability in intimate relationship with myself and close others, but I still find it difficult to have a social self that intimately feels and engages a social and global connection with the world and collective issues. Yet I feel a kind of glass ceiling that stops with just understanding larger issues. For example, the three random murders that happened last weekend in my neighborhood. You know, and I can't denumb myself to feel these things, to feel the loss and sadness and fear that are there in me in the aftermath of the most recent American elections, for example. And yet if I'm going to be this kind of a citizen, obviously, I need to be able to feel those things, too.
Well, I'd say don't make an ideal out of denumbing. When we all numb some of the time, we all have to shut off some stimuli as part of being human.
Mm. So you would say that it's maybe okay? I mean, in terms of my agenda here, I'm very much an advocate for us really feeling our larger social circumstance. I don't want us all to be so numb that we are cut off from the larger affairs, you know, human affairs that are affecting our world.
Well,
I want us to care.
I agree, Terry. I think to cut through that, we have to denumb ourselves in terms of our history, how we are in relationship. Then we can turn to the community at large and let that denumbing continue. Because I think the less numb we are, the more functional we are.
It's not something that we can just say to ourselves, well, okay, I really need to be able to feel this and then turn that switch on. This goes into going into your personal history of where you did separate out, where you couldn't, things were so painful that you learned to not feel them deeply, or feeling there's a spiritual should to go into the bigger picture and not to feel deeply about these kind of events. And so it would be going into your own background and history, not just saying, okay, well, I guess, you know, now I need to start feeling more deeply.
Here's something that maybe clarifies it a bit. Sometimes we work with someone who's in deep grief, and it's their grief, and they're in agony, and it's completely understandable. But at a certain point, often what happens, it shifts from being my grief to our grief. There's a sense of, and even the grief, there's a sense of the grief that is everywhere, omnipresent. And when I've seen people tap into that level of grief, they don't get blown away. They become calmer. They become more expanded. Because inside grief, there's a spaciousness. Once the crying starts to pass, it's not like reactive sorrow. We're ripped open, and we can feel so easily. We can feel nature. We can feel the divine. And we can feel other people suffering without being blown away by it. In other words, we really get that our heart has room for all of it.
Mm.
And once you get that, that's a lovely thing to know. This heart we have, what a miracle that it has room for everything.
Well, that's a beautiful way for us to conclude. Thank you so much. Mm. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and thank you guys, Robert and Diane.
Oh, it's been wonderful, Terry.
Really great. I'm going to tell everybody what's coming up next week and open up the lines for us all to say goodbye, and a few reminders. Please make sure you're connected to our blog at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog and our Facebook group at beyondawakeningseries.com/Facebook, where you can discuss any of these topics we talked about today. And you can also send questions if you have them for Dan Millman or for Samuel and Linda next week, who are in some of the same considerations in a different way that we've been just getting into. And you're invited to post comments and thoughts about today's dialogue, because this was very rich, and I hope it was provocative for many of you. If you or anybody you know might be interested in this series, please forward them any one of our emails so they can join us too, or invite them to register at beyondawakeningseries.com. If you're interested in me and my work, please visit integralspiritualpractice.com. And I want to thank a couple of our sponsors, Our Future Planet. Our Future Planet is a charity and online network that allows you to share ideas, design your future, and create global change in the real world. By joining Our Future Planet, you can understand how global issues are linked, design a positive vision for the future, and create solutions to get us there. You can connect with others with mutual interests and ideas, bring your ideas to life through actions and projects. You can join this community of planetary citizens, people who care about the future of our planet and wish to contribute to positive change today, at ourfutureplanet.org. That's ourfutureplanet.org. And BeliefNet. Did you know that BeliefNet.com exists to help people like you find and walk a spiritual path that brings comfort, hope, clarity, strength, and happiness? As the largest spiritual site on the web, not only does BeliefNet offer inspiring devotional tools, access to the best spiritual teachers and clergy in the world, and thought-provoking commentaries, you'll also experience the most supportive online community around. Looking for daily support? Sign up now for any BeliefNet newsletter and receive a daily dose of wisdom, humor, inspiration, and more. Visit BeliefNet.com today. And remember to please tune in just 3 days at 5 p.m. Pacific time, Sunday, November 7th. I'll be speaking with Dan Millman, author of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. Our dialogue will be titled Head in the Clouds, Feet on the Ground. Dan's a very clear and sane and, peaceful warrior, strong spirit. And next Thursday, exactly a week from the dialogue we've just completed, I'll be talking with Samuel Bonder and Linda Groves Bonder. Samuel founded the innovative approach to psycho-spiritual integration and awakening called Waking Down in Mutuality. And we'll be probing into some of the territory that we've been discussing here from a different angle. So finally, thank you, everybody, for joining us for this rich dialogue. Let's open up our phone lines so we can all hear each other's voices, at least those of us who called in rather than listening on the web. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Well, thank you, Robert. Thank you, Diane. That was fun.
Thank
it's always
you,
nice
Terry.
To hear
you,
some
Terry.
Voices, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Otherwise, we sort of have the illusion of talking just to each other.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been great, Terry. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you. I've really enjoyed this.